Get closer to Irish rugby with News Talk and Vodafone, official sponsor of the Irish rugby team.
All right, Wednesday Night Rugby, Keith Wood and Gerry Thorney are with us. Gentlemen, you're very welcome.
Good evening.
Good evening.
So a couple of weeks ago, I was making the case that maybe Italy don't have a future in the competition, but I think credit where it's due. It turns out they've got some giant rugby brains looking after their future, and actually, you know what? If they do a bit more of this kind of stuff, then I'm all for them.
They're good value, aren't they? They were really good value last weekend. It was very entertaining to watch. You'd never think that a defensive ploy that's so rooted in kind of spoiling tactics could be so almost innovative. Not new, but innovative, if that can be the way to use it, to the extent they used it. It was intriguing and fascinating to watch, and shows the value of Conor Shea bringing in Brendan Venter, most probably, and the way they prepared and planned for the intervening 2 weeks. There was only a little bit of a suspicion that, you know, the 6 day turnaround against Ireland just left them flagged, not ready, prepared, and their fitness levels again were causing to doubt in the last 20 minutes of Twickenham, no less. But this time they had a proper run in and a really good preparation. They used it very well, and contrary to what Eddie Jones said, that like it's not rugby and they should have their money back, this is after a 6-2 win, which over 50 points were scored, and they should get their money back. Obviously, they expected minimum 70, maybe 100-point rout, and it didn't materialise.
Those of us who back the spread, anyway. just for shits and giggles, here's Dylan Hartley and James Haskell asking Rowan Poit for direction around what the hell was happening at Rook Time.
On the Rook thing, what do we need to do for it to be Rook?
I can't say. I am the referee, I'm not the coach.
Dio!
Okay, sure.
You will find probably the solution with your coach.
Yeah, okay.
Who has more ability than me to tell you what you have to do.
It was the rule. Well, no, we just wanted to know what the rule was, what the exact rule is.
If there's no rug, there is just an area around the tackle on the ground, making an offside line, and that's it.
There have to be 2 metres from the rug.
1 metre.
So if we high clear someone out and get them in, then it's a rug. No.
But during the tackle, that's a tackle.
Right.
Yeah, after.
Up, yeah,
after.
Up the ball.
It is a bit weird, Keith.
I love the line on the rook thing from Haskell. It's kind of entertaining. Yeah, it was strange and strange to watch, and intriguing to see, for me, the lack of response from England as in what to do with it. And look, it happens in lineouts, and look, everybody's gone through all the times when it's happened in the past. It's never been as, I would say, pervasively constant in a game as a ploy. I definitely haven't seen a game that has been played like it. And there's a solution around it, is pick and go and attack the space, because if somebody's out of there, it means there has to be a gap somewhere. It wasn't that they weren't reacting. Water boys can come on and say, lads, you have to pick it up the guts when that happens. It just waited until the half time. Now, I actually thought Poit let Italy away with a few that weren't. And I think he got caught up in the whole thing himself. And that made it a little bit harder for it. But look, Eddie Jones' response afterwards was awful. I think he was trying to deflect a lot of pressure away from his players.
Conor Shea was on saying that there's a private Eddie and a public Eddie, and private Eddie not actually as damning as he was in public, funnily enough.
Well, I think he was trying to take some of the pressure off his players, quite literally. And in fairness to Eddie Jones will do most anything to try and win anyway. And
just on that, though, is this a sign that maybe we were, I'm not going to say overrating, because he's done absolutely amazing work since, and he wins that game, and they're still odds on to win a Grand Slam at this point. But that actually, he's not infallible. That there was a sense building about this team that they're, you know, the All Blacks under Graham Henry type level of quality, but they couldn't really clearly themselves think their way out of the problem.
Well, I would say they haven't played particularly well in the Six Nations, but they still have their wins. They have 3 wins already, and they're winning ugly. They're doing the old Liverpool thing of winning ugly is fine. And they're not playing particularly well. I think they're missing a few players. I think they're being found out a little at times. I think they're a fine side, and they will click, and they will be very, very impressive when they do. This was a bit destabilising for them. And, you know, I think you have to give a huge amount of credit to Conor O'Shea. when you look at how they played and how they went about the game, their job is not entertainment. Their job is not any of the rest. It's to try and give them a chance. And I thought, and I will say, I thought it was a bit mean-spirited from Eddie Jones on some of it in saying that, it didn't work. Well, it was very close to working.
Yeah, I mean,
if they
brought a line out and a goal kicker, it would have been very interesting.
The other thing is, though, that it did kind of expose that that undercurrent of arrogance, which, you know, we've kind of long associated.
Undercurrent. I think you're underselling it, actually.
What do you call the thing that goes through a stick of rock then? Maybe that's more accurate.
Yeah, well, it's coursing through
the imprint,
you know,
of arrogance. Well, yeah. it was the tweets from the former players, which are actually worse. Like, Eddie Jones comes out and says that, and okay, top bands, Eddie. But actually, the former players, who Matt Dawson was saying this is an absolute disgrace, you know, like, shut up.
It's not a disgrace. They've exploited a gap in the laws, and it's laws, not rules. And I know I'm a pedant with that, but that is what they are. And they've exploited it. Now, I think it'll change, actually, because even though, and World Rugby have said, of course, they look at it in due course. If this was to happen every week, yes, it wouldn't be a great spectacle.
But it won't, because, as you said, somebody, like, every time they picked and went, like, it's the RFU coming out and saying as well it needs to change the rules. Again, screw you, RFU.
Yeah, well, they're coming out to say it because it suits
laws,
them,
sorry.
The laws. But I would still say that and the non-engagement in a line-out is awkward. Now, you can't say that there has to be an offside line in every single part of the game. But this is what happens with the laws, that they'll be exploited to a point where people will say, yeah, but, you know, that doesn't quite fit the bill or blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And yeah, it'll change in time. It doesn't change overnight. Of course it doesn't. That would be the wrong thing. But everything has changed. And I still go over the idea of rugby being professional only for 22 or 3 years. Still trying to find where its best place is, you know, across the board. And there's been changes every single year to try and make it better and better and better. And I can't see a way that this wouldn't change over the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I think there's a touch of the Jose Mourinho's about Eddie Jones. You know, he's very articulate, very bright, but he's also got a very sizable ego. And it's very interesting that Conor Jay labelled it the fox, because he was actually outfoxed. So I think there's an element of embarrassment about it as well. Like, as Keith said, they couldn't get a message down until halftime, which is extraordinary in the modern game.
Is there a suggestion that it's just a weird sense that maybe that's going to ultimately be his undoing? This thing which, until this point, I was so impressed by the way he restored that sense of, we're gonna be the bullies. If anything's gonna happen out in the field of play, we're gonna be the ones who instigate it. The way that he stood by Dylan Hartley was perfectly in keeping with what they're trying to do, and I fully understood it. Now, though, I just think he's a bit of an asshole, and I think that that's actually going to work against him quicker, maybe, than in this World Cup cycle.
Yeah, I'm not going to use terminology like that to describe him. I think you have to respect the achievement of winning 17 Test matches in a row. You have to respect the achievement of what Eddie Jones and Steve Borthwick and others did with that Japan side in the World Cup. They were, in many ways, one of the stories.
They were nice
of the World
then,
Cup.
Though.
Because they were coaching Japan, not England.
No, because they weren't calling out opponents for being smarter than them. And like, that's about as low as you can go. Okay, there's loads of other things you can really do that are horrible. But in terms of, like, just professional decorum, it's like, hang on a second.
He came across as very churlish and very begrudging and disrespectful, I would say. Very disrespectful towards the Italians.
Before the game, actually, Jerry.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. We're going to take them to the cleaners.
Take them to...
An appalling
line. Do you know what? And I hate this idea that we play this holier-than-thou game. And, we don't. It's a tough, hard, aggressive, snarly, you know, difficult game.
Gougy.
But there is a line. There are many lines, but there's a line in terms of treating your opponents with respect. And actually, New Zealand would want to take Italy absolutely to the cleaners. But they wouldn't say
Never
it.
Say it.
Yeah.
I think that they're going to be a fascinating case study under Jones. They're a little bit more interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how they evolve over the next while. A bit like Jose Mourinho, he's never been there really for the long haul too often. It could unravel. Who knows? Maybe it won't. Maybe he's going to lead them to repeated Grand Slams and World Cup glory and number one in the world.
Yeah.
It's going to be very fascinating. I would say, though, we've discussed them in November. I didn't think they were particularly creative in November either. I think they fed off mistakes and turnovers. They've done that very effectively against Australia. And in this winning run, of course, they've never played the All Blacks once, nor, of course, if they played Ireland away.
Yeah. OK, so suddenly I feel a bit more confident about the Ireland game given the performance that we had at the weekend. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a bit about the Welsh, even going in depth with them over the last 24 hours or so.
Been looking at the videos, yeah.
What are you seeing?
Oof, I don't think they're that bad. I think this is very indicative of actually the most competitive Six Nations I can remember, that quite a good side is going to finish fifth just by the law of average. A very good side has to finish fifth. I don't think that's happened before. Partly down to Scotland's improvement. I think France are on an upward curve. Maybe Wales have become a little bit stagnant. But that being said, you look at that Scottish game, and for an hour, even though by the hour's point they're behind 19-13 in the scoreboard, they've been predominantly the better side and took the game to Scotland repeatedly. Scotland had about two chances of the match and converted them absolutely superbly, particularly the second try with the long pass from Finn Russell and the quick transfer from Stuart Hogg, which exposed George North, who was quite awful on the day. He missed three tackles. He was stood up twice. He made no negligible impact carrying the ball in hand. He almost looked like there was something wrong with him, or he's disinterested, mentally wasn't there. For the star turn of the Lions 3 years ago, it was, I'm not just single out him, Wales were wrong in a few different respects, but that was one of the things that was missing. I thought Rhys Webb was outstanding. They had they were rightly called for obstruction of the line-out by John Lacey, as were Ireland away to Scotland in the same corner, which was a pivotal moment of the match that would have seen them go ahead.
Yeah.
They made line breaks. Jonathan Davies gets through. He gets that offload away to Rhys Webb. That's a try. Rhys Webb has a slight back foot in touch for a try, which would have given Lee Happ any conversion to put them in front. All I'm saying is I think that scoreline was a little bit unflattering for them. They're a better side than that. And you look back at the England game and the physical intensity they brought to that match at the Millennium Stadium, against it, okay, it's England. And there's a pattern emerging I've noticed in this tournament, that is that thus far, France, Italy and Wales have all produced their best performances against England. And I've got a sneaky hunch that that pattern might be continued with Scotland and Ireland as well. But Wales were outstanding that day, and but for one exit strategy, if they'd just gone through a couple of phases and made an angle for Dan Baker to find touch, they'd probably win that match. And in some respects, they would have deserved it. They are a little bit blunt in attack. They are a little bit one-dimensional. They truck it up and truck it up and truck it up. They're lacking a little bit of creativity, a bit of a spark. And when they do make offloads, when they do make line breaks, they're not getting supporters onto the shoulders of those line breaks. Otherwise, the results might have been a little bit different. But I do tend to subscribe more to the Ronan O'Gara theory than the Shane Horgan theory, and that is that they are a very wounded animal and they've got 2 weeks to stew on what happened to them in Murrayfield. And they won't be able to show their faces in the streets of Cardiff. They're a very proud rugby nation. They've been in the Vale now. They're there this week, there next week. And I do think they'll come out spitting. And 8 o'clock on a Friday night, I don't know when they last lost all their home games in the Six Nations.
Yeah.
I don't know when that last happened to them.
Dublin's going to be good that night. It's 1-1 in the City Huddersfield game. What did you make of this, Keith? I think you watched the game with Jonathan Davis.
I was there. I was in Murrayfield. It was, and I kind of half watched the screen and half watched the pitch. And it was, you made a comment there, Jerry, in relation to Scotland only having a couple of chances and taking them. Scotland against Ireland and in the autumn and against Wales last weekend have been absolutely clinical.
Mm.
And they've been kicking their goals. They have been taking every opportunity. They haven't been getting many chances in the opposition 22, but they are ruthless, which they haven't been by a long, long while. And what you would say in stark contrast on the weekend was that Wales were sloppy in those positions. So sloppy, whether they're kicking to goal or kicking into the corner, having a debate in the middle of it. That's not a good sign for a team. You want absolutely determined, yeah, we're going to do this. You know, there's no doubt what's going to happen in that situation. They got messy. They became incredibly one-dimensional. They were lacking a cutting threat totally. And watching it with Jonathan Davis, Jiffy was just going ballistic. I have to tell you, I was sitting between two of the most partisan TV pundits I know. In Andy Nicol absolutely loses his mind when Scotland are playing. He nearly cries when they lose. But the pure joy in his face that Scotland had finally won after 10 times was kind of interesting. And Jonathan Davis is just goes ballistic, and he nearly knocked the table over. All he wants to do is see Wales have a bit of a cut. And Wales are not scoring a huge number of points anymore. I don't think it's look. I think they look flat for some reason. I've watched as the teams have played over the last couple of years since the World Cup. All the teams have made a level of progression. Ireland's game has moved on. Scotland's game has moved on. England's game has moved on. With a variety of different pod systems, there are a variation on a team in the middle of the field where you're pulling it behind one player to another player. The forwards are intermingling. The forwards are not trying to cover the whole pitch. They're only covering parts of the pitch. Wales are not really doing that. They make an effort at it, but then drift back into the one-out stuff at times.
Is it confirmed Gatland's leaving? That he's definitely going back to New Zealand at some point?
Not that
before
I'm
sure of. All right. I've definitely been hearing fairly strong Gatland's going to do the Lions and maybe take them to the next World Cup, but it's not guaranteed he's going to take them to the next World Cup. It just feels like this is a relationship. Obviously, it's not even in situ at the moment, but it can't be good for Welsh rugby in the middle of the World Cup cycle to have a guy who's not actually your head coach for 18 months. Surely?
Well, that can be very difficult for it. I've been looking at the Scottish one far more closely, to be honest, and Vern Cotter and how... Yeah, you know, it hasn't seemed, Murrayfield haven't seemed to have done a great job in bringing him in and then getting him to leave, and suddenly the team is starting to play very well. And Cotter didn't want to go, but he's got a great deal apparently
in Montpellier.
In Montpellier, and so he'll be absolutely fine and happy. And I think Scotland will do well with Gregor Townsend, whether it's too early for him or not, we'll see over the next couple of years. But there is, I don't know whether there's a difficulty with it. Like, I don't think England have played very well this year, but they have a winning mentality. Ireland just didn't get our head right in the first weekend. It has been sharp as sharp since. Scotland have, you know, I think Scotland have been, they're a good team. They've been a pretty decent team for two or three years and are winning nothing. And it maybe has taken two or three years for them to get to that level of mentality. I don't know whether Wales are just off the mark at the moment or expected to win because they've won for the previous 9 years or not. They were just a bit sloppy. So I think they can turn that around. Like Ireland turned it around in 1 week, Wales can. But we're used to seeing Wales score really good and exciting tries.
Yeah. Is the coaching issue not an issue, though?
Yo, I'd see where you're coming from. I would be very surprised if Warren Gatland did leave when there's another couple of years left in his contract. I would have thought he would see it through to the World Cup. But you're looking at a coaching ticket that, you know, Rob Howley, Sean Edwards, Robin McBride, they've all been there for quite a while. The players are listening to the same voices over and over again. And they're certainly, their attacking game, as I said earlier, looks comparatively blunt. You think of those passages of play against England when they brought immense intensity and physicality, typified by Ross Mariarty against England, and they hammered away a couple of long stretches in the second half. And came away with 0 points and 3 points from them from two long multi-phase attacks. And it just looked like the opposition teams, even Italy to a large degree, it's looked like a very good defensive drill for the opposition.
Yeah. What exactly happened with the Alwyn Jones being questioned on the pitch situation? Does this have anything to do with he was prevaricating about whether or not they were going to kick for the corner?
Oh, and Dan Biggar turned to him and go to the corner. Yeah, that there looked to be quite a debate there. And then he seemingly said to Dan Biggar, go for the post. And Dan Biggar seemed to be reluctant to do that. He wanted to go in the corner. And then there was a bit of a debate amongst the forwards. And then they changed their mind. Having told John Lacey that they were going to take the kick a goal, they then kind of changed their mind and were allowed to kick to the corner.
So doesn't this speak to a lack of overarching identity where everybody exactly knows you do your job? Our job is this, this, and this. In these scenarios, at this time, with the score at this, it's pre-programmed.
You get debates between Johnny Sexton and Rory Best about whether they go to the corner as well. You know what I mean? That happens. It's easier to pick on these things when a team loses.
Well, but also when there's no coach, you know?
Well, there is Rob Howley there, who was the head coach when they won the title 4 years ago.
Yeah, the second time. Impossible. I just think it's a really impossible job for him to be able to come along and not be a bit of a lame duck head coach. And also, like, Gatland, for the second time, is disappearing off to do the Lions in the middle of a World Cup cycle when you're actually supposed to be blooding new players and seeing how they interact under the extreme tension of the Six Nations.
But you weren't saying this 4 seasons ago when Wales beat England 30 points to 3 in the final weekend to clinch the Six Nations title.
Well, I probably wasn't. No. Second time's a charm. It's 3-1 now. Man City have scored 2 goals in 2 minutes. One is an own goal. One's a penalty from Sergio Aguero. You're staying out of all that, Keith.
No, I'm not. The captain has to make the call for the kick in the corner. He looks at his kicker. Maybe the difficulty for him is he's got two kickers. One wanted to take it, one didn't want to take it. Captain has to stick to his guns and make the decision. And I mean, we were having a good laugh last week with Rog, and I remember him coming off the field once, and I said, "Kick that there." He said, "I don't think so." And I said, "You will. You know, this is your job." He was very young at the time, and he duly put the ball down and banged it over for us to beat England. And there's other days when you're going to say, and you make that call and you miss, and it's both your fault.
Keith, am I right in saying that that time the long unbeaten record went to Thomond Park for Munster, there was a pivotal moment the second half when they were playing against the breeze and they got down to Leicester territory and they had a close range penalty and Paulie signalled go for the post and Rog said, "No, let's go for the scrum, let's go try and make the most of this visit," and they didn't get the 7 points out of it. I think they conceded a penalty at the scrum. If it can happen between Paul O'Connell and Ronan O'Gara, it can happen between Dan Bigger and Elwyn Jones.
Well, it can, and it actually, do you know, it's an interesting part of the conversation that we have at the moment is that an awful lot of everybody now expects the ball to be kicked into the corner, and that's great, it's great. I'm not so certain it's great all the time, and you can get away with it and things can go very well and it can be brilliant play. I just don't think it should be an automatic one, and I was uncertain when Ireland kicked into the corner because it's a dirty, wet day. There's only ever been a few points. Now, of course, we went on to win quite comfortably at the end, and maybe that's just us not knowing the full belief that's within the team that they can go and actually do it afterwards. But I don't think it should be a foregone conclusion to kick a goal, and I don't think it should be a foregone conclusion to kick into the corner. You need to have the courage of your convictions, and you need to make the right call at the time. We've all made the wrong ones. You know, that's kind of part of it. But you're hoping that as the players know and build up their leadership skills, that they'll try and make less and less of those wrong calls, you know. And it's the game has progressed an awful lot since we were doing it.
Also, Keith, to add on to a mucky, wet day or windy, wet day, and you add in the clock towards the end of a first half, and it's a one-score game, and it's 36 minutes gone or 37 minutes gone and certainly 38 minutes gone. When an attacking team opts to go to the corner then, they almost have to score.
Yeah.
Because if they don't, the defensive team comes off the pitch with all the psychological energy from that decision. I think in that scenario, when you've got the clock as a factor as well, you're almost better off going for the posts.
This way, it's such a great game.
Yeah.
Up in Edinburgh, Lee Halfpenny had a kick, not in front of the goals, but not far off it. Missed it by 8 or 9 metres. Scotland went straight down and banged over a penalty just before half-time. 6-point swing. Brilliant. So suddenly what would have been a 10-point half-time break, suddenly it's 4 points and Scotland are really back in the game. That is the first time that Scotland have come back. It's the first or second time in the Six Nations history that they've come back at half-time to win a game when they were behind.
It's pretty impressive in 17 years. Just on the point about the being hyper-aggressive early in the game, I really like it as an Ireland fan to see us do that.
Love it.
Like going to the corner?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it shows
a degree of aggressive intent. Sorry.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
Disagreeing
with
myself.
Yeah. It's like, oh, we've just changed your mind.
Yeah. No, I love our tone of the game at the weekend. I loved how we started it, that there was an awful lot of hard, hyper-aggressive contact at the start. I like that.
But I wonder, is that just a way of signifying, even if it doesn't work, that actually this is what we're doing to you today? Like, I get that you can do that in the physical confrontations, but there's a mental aspect of, balls, they're kicking this to the corner.
And it affects the visiting team as well.
That's what I mean, that's the point.
Yeah. Remember Ireland against England in Croke Park, not the 43-13 one. A couple of years later, I think it only ended up 14-13. They got a late try. Rog missed a few kicks that day. It wasn't quite going for them. Brian O'Driscoll had just been taken out late by Dylan Armitage, surprise, surprise, and they get an attacking penalty and Driscoll's down getting treated. So the vice-captains, Paul O'Connell and Ronan O'Gara again, go into conclave and decide, let's kick to the corner. And you could see the 15 men in white on the line going, oh no, go away, take your 3 points. The crowd get lifted and they didn't score off the mall, but they pummeled and finally Mr. Wonderful gets up off his feet, Brian O'Driscoll, and does his usual burrows over from a metre out, and that was the winning of the match that day as well.
Best try of the campaign, actually. The best try by Brian in that campaign. Was that 09, that was the Grand Slam.
Yeah, he got 5 that year.
He burrowed over from half a metre. Mm-hmm. And in my view, it was his best try for the simple reason it was the right thing that needed to be done at that time, and he put his hand up to do the forwards job to Burrow over the line.
And the decision to go to the corner had actually been made by his vice captains, O'Gara and O'Connell.
Yeah, so it all works out in the end.
But England, I'd say, safe to say you're right, though. I'd say English players would have actually preferred they took the three to get back in the halfway line.
I wonder if that really helps in the game against a team like France. Maybe it's different.
Quite possibly.
Maybe it's different against the Welsh, who don't seem to care about that kind of stuff. You just kick the points against them because that's what they're. That's the only language they understand. To wrap us up tonight, hi lads, Australian friends have always told me there's nothing worse than a whinging palm. Now it seems that there is a whinging Aussie, in control of a team of whinging palms. Kind regards, says Brian in Dublin. Thanks for that. That's Jerry, class. Keith.
Thanks, Brian.
Great stuff. Thanks very much. We'll talk to you again on next week, Wednesday Night Rugby, when we're previewing a Friday night's game in Dublin. It is Ireland against Wales on what hopefully will be a magical Friday night. It's 3-1, just on the stroke of half time. Man City going to go through to the next round of the Cup against Huddersfield tonight. Cheers.
Off the ball.
Text us on 53106 for 30 cents.
News Talk 106 to 108.